Even though they were not careful of toes and fingers, the young people did not flinch. A little readily at first, but gathering strength as more and more joined in, they chanted, "Hell no, we won't go," and then segued into, "We shall overcome." The effect on the cadet and the flag burner was identical. Their throats tightened and their eyes filled with tears. The stars and stripes in Joe's hand dripped fire and plumed smoke, causing the captain of the militia to single him out for personal attention. Incensed by the desecration of his country's flag and infuriated by the shouts of the peace marchers, the officer hurdled the prone protesters, felled the bony young man with an expert thumb thrust below the left ear, and, when a blonde girl tried to intervene, smacked her aside. Joe lay with the burning flag on his chest as the captain kicked at him in a frenzy of vengeful patriotism. Dick was overcome by a quixotic need to become the instrument of divine justice. He vaulted over the demonstrators with as little forethought as the captain, who turned just in time to receive the heel of a hand in the nose. The soldier fell across the smoldering flag, bleeding copiously. Dick stood alone, surrounded by the bodies of passively resisting young men and women, eyed by approximately 40 militiamen who had just seen him dispatch their leader. There was nowhere to go, and it was much too late to lie down and go limp, even if he had wanted to. The militiamen dragged off the protesters to paddy wagons with kicks and arm-twisting, as their martial spirits, cheated of a fight, turned to mean-spirited sadism. The circle of bodies around the romantic hero grew smaller. Police sirens brayed and bullhorns croaked, but the young Canadian had long since been deafened by the pounding of his own pulse. His blood was up, and he prepared to go down fighting.
"Shithead, you're screwing it up. This is a peace march, not a freaking brawl."
He turned to look down on the blonde flower child he had intervened to protect. His jaw dropped, because it was incredible to his romantic soul that so innocent a face, above so white a blouse, covering, he blushed to notice, such substantial unbrassiered breasts, could be speaking the language of locker rooms. He wavered.
"Lie down! Go limp!" she hissed.
It was not in his nature or training to comply, especially since at that moment a large and pimply-faced militiaman took hold of her left breast and hair, while the other seized her ankles and spread them apart. The two part-time soldiers later confessed that they were impressed. One fell with a groin kicked so hard he was excused duty for 2 months. The other, letting go hair and breast, got in one ineffectual swing before being hip-checked and then rabbit-punched as he slid to the ground. Other militiamen stopped hauling off bodies and closed in. This they understood. It took about 17 long seconds before the romantic Canadian went down under a fivefold assault of nightstick-wielding enthusiasts. Some of them hit each other, and one had to be treated for a bitten hand. They all loved it. Citizen bystanders watched as the militiamen shoved the protesters into paddy wagons for the short ride to the back of the courthouse. As Dick gradually regained consciousness, he blinked up at the underside of a long wooden bench and the feet of the people who sat on it. He turned his head and saw the lanky flag burner getting painfully to his feet. Around them, the advocates of peace, love, and mutual coexistence sat on benches and talked about the wild man who had ruined their peaceful demonstration. Dick slowly realized that he himself was the militaristic, violent, aggressive warmonger, that they were rebuking in terms ranging from the vulgar to the obscene. As the events of the day came sluggishly to his mind, Dick felt humiliated by incomprehensible failure. The dragon he had slain had turned out to be the languishing maiden's favorite,